a subject done in collaboration with Marco Pedotto and Lorenzo. So, this is the outline of my talk. I will start with a section of motivations in which I will tell you why I think it is interesting to consider brain world models in six dimensions this time. After, I will concentrate on a particular example of brain world that conjugates two interesting ideas, the idea of flux stabilization, stabilization by fluxes, and the idea of brain world. After, I will study linear perturbation on this exciting, try to interpret physically the massless modes that I will present, and after, by using the analysis of linear perturbation that I will present, I will study how gravity behaves at large distances on the brain. And at the end, I will conclude. So, let us start with general motivations. Why it is interesting to consider six-dimensional models? Okay, historically, they represented the first examples of supersymmetric flux compactification to four-dimensional Minkowski space-time by Rajvarda Eni, Salam Strati, and by Salam Strati. They showed that taking a six-dimensional space with a gauge field and a positive cosmological constant, it is possible to compactify this space from six to four dimensions on a sphere. And the radius of the sphere is fixed by the magnetic charge, by a magnetic monopole, essentially. And all this procedure can be done preserving supersymmetry. So you will have an n equals one Minkowski supersymmetric four-dimensional field. Afterwards, much more recently, they resulted very important for brain world constructions in scenarios with flat, large extra dimensions. I refer to the Archimedes-Dimopoulos value proposal to address the hierarchy problem. And what is nice is that they have very interesting predictions that are deviation from Newtonian law of gravity at short distances. And after 1998, people realized that models in six dimensions are also interesting for field theory particle physics models. Scenarios have been proposed in which you can break electroweak symmetry via Wilson line in six dimensions. You can also predict the number of color generations. You can construct realistic granularification models with extra dimensions. And also you can generate the observed value of neutrino masses in six-dimensional models with brains that have a certain thickness. More recently, models in six dimensions have been introduced also to address the cosmological constant problem. Since the cosmological constant for an observer on the brain will be can be absorbed into bulk quantities via Turing mechanism. I will explain this point later. And it is also possible to generate the observed value of the vacuum energy as due to a Susi breaking effects in the six dimensions, as proposed by Cliff Barges. But now let's come to the gravitational aspects that have already been considered in the literature, for example, in antidecidual six models or on bigravity models, or on some cosmological sectors. But interesting issues have not been studied in detail, and this is what I'm going to discuss in this talk. So to study gravitational aspects of brain world models in six dimensions. Now, the one that we just presented was a general review. Let me focus now on a particular model. That is the Rigby ball model. In this kind of scenario, it is possible to conjugate the idea of flux stabilization with brain worlds. So suppose that you start with an action in six dimensions that contains gravity, a positive cosmological constant, and a gauge field. And suppose that you also allow for the presence of codimension two brains that are codimension two singularities with 1 plus 3 dimensions. It is possible to show that a consistent solution for Einstein and field equations related to this action is given by this. So this is the metric in 6 dimensions that corresponds to a 4-dimensional flat metric in 4 dimensions, plus a metric that represents a sphere with a depth tempo. Okay, in this picture, you can see what I mean. Here, I'm imagining that 2 of the dimensions are compactified upon a sphere, but removing a slice of the sphere, I will arrive to a compactification that resembles a rectangle, in which there are 2 conical singularities, here and here, and on the conical singularities, there are 2 codimension tubelines, in which we are supposed to live. So there is this metric that represents a sphere with a conical singularity. Beta corresponds to the depth tangle. When beta is equal to 1, you have the sphere. When beta is dependent 1, you have this rectangle. This is the value for the gauge field and the cosmological constant that are related to the radius of the sphere and to the depth tangle beta. Also, the tension of the brains that sit at the conical singularity depends on the depth tangle. When beta is equal to 1, you have, and there are no brains, so you go to the spherical case. When beta is different than 1, you must put a certain tension on the brains in order to solve the Einstein equations. Now, what is important is that the radius of the sphere is not arbitrary, but it is completely fixed here from the monopole charge and from the cosmological constant. And what is also important is that the depth angle is associated with the brain tension, even by this formula. So this is the setting that I'm going to discuss in this case. Now, why this is interesting for the cosmological constant problem? Because it is possible in this scenario to think that, okay, suppose that we live on the brain, and suppose that the tension and the tension of the brain should correspond to our 4-dimensional cosmological constant. Suppose now that you change the cosmological constant of the brain, so you change the density, so you change the brain tension. What happens is that the solution, as you can see from this is the previous solution that I wrote here, suppose that you change lambda. In order to satisfy all the Einstein equation, it is enough that you change beta, the density tangle. But as you can see from this solution, the 4 infinite dimensions remain flat for any value of the cosmological constant lambda. So in this sense, you can see that the cosmological constant of the brain is transmitted to bulk quantities. And you can still have a flat 4-dimensional space-time from the 4-dimensional, from a 4-dimensional point of view, but the cosmological constant is absorbed on bulk quantities, in particular on the depth tangle of the compact sphere. Okay, this would be very nice, but unfortunately, in this simple case, what happens is that this monopole charge that depends on beta results quantized for a Dirac quantization condition. And this means that you cannot continuously change the parameter beta. So you cannot continuously change the cosmological constant of the brain lambda, since this parameter beta will be quantized. So one can hope to overcome this problem by considering a system on a more complicated supergravity setup, in which you have more fields to play with, like scalar freeform fields. And also in a supergravity setting, it is possible to see that you can, by breaking supersymmetry at the 6-dimensional level, you could also generate the abstract value for the cosmological constant. This is the slash proposal by Bartis. But also in the more general case, the problem with the quantization condition remains. And for this reason, recent approaches looked at this system, this rectangle system, from another point of view, trying to find 10 dependent configurations that connect backward with different values of beta. But in this talk, I will be interested on a different issue, that is, how does gravity behave on the brain, on the polymorphic brain. So, this is the question that you want to address. So, the first step is to ask the following question. Suppose that we want to add energy momentum tensor that is different than pure tension on the polymorphic two plane, on the conical singularity. How this energy momentum tensor back react on the gravity and on the ground fields? Okay, in the polymorphic one, ADS5 work case without collapses, this is a central question in order to understand the behavior of life on the brain. Indeed, by starting with a work by taking ADS5, so let's go to the ADS5 case. And thinking to a brain situated at the origin y equal to 0, it is possible to see that if you want to have energy momentum tensor, T mu nu, on the brain, this energy momentum tensor will produce a back reaction on one scalar mode in the system, that is a scalar mode theta that parameterizes the position of the brain. And in particular, there is this important relation that says that the place of the energy momentum tensor on the brain acts as a source for this perturbed scalar perturbation theta. And this relation is essential in order to show that it is possible in the Van der Sundrum scenario to recover Einstein gravity at large distances. Now, is there an analog effect with more than one extra dimension in the flat case that it was considered before? And now that we know that there is a flux in the bulk, how does the brain energy momentum tensor interact with the stabilization mechanism with the other flux?
So there's one scalar mode of the problem? Or
in the anti-reciprocal case, yes. In the case that I'm going to consider now, there will be more than one scalar mode.
Okay, and that relationship is just an additional constraint that you put in, or it comes from
somewhere? This comes from the junction conditions, from the junction conditions that the brain muscles.
So continuity is in that case?
No, actually, these are junction conditions that relate the chunk on the first derivatives of the metric.
So the extrinsic curvature?
Exactly. These are the junction conditions.
Okay.
I will discuss the analog of this in this dimensional models in a few slides. And this condition is crucial in order to get the correct polarization for the graviton mode on the brain. I will show the analog of this. So, why this question, this kind of question of how gravity behaves on the brain is interesting on this sector? Okay, suppose that we answer this question. The answer will allow us to learn some features that are possibly in common with modalistic string setups, in which this system mimics in a simple brain wall setting some properties that are common with string theory compatibilities with brains and background classes. But in a full string theory setup, the analysis of perturbation is difficult to perform just because there are really a huge number of fields involved, while this system is much simpler to handle. And also, this system can offer a consistent framework to study brain wall gravity with flat extra dimensions and can allow to address some issues that are notoriously difficult to ask in work geometry, like in the Van der Sundrum case. For example, to find exact solution for black holes confined on the brain. And already at the six-dimensional level, some papers appeared that found codimension to bring black holes confined on the brain. So, hope that the question is clear? No. Now, what we want to study is the question of how energy momentum tensor different than pure tension can be embedded on a conical singular, on the tip of a conical singular. Now, this question is really subtle, because there are general arguments that say that on a conical singularity, on the tip of a conical singularity, the only energy momentum tensor that is allowed is pure tension. In particular, the energy momentum tensor that sits on the singularity must be proportional to the induced method on the singularity itself. And this comes from studying the, in general terms, the Einstein equation, the singular part of the Einstein equations nearby the conical singularity. So we can see that already here we have a big problem, because we cannot put any matter or radiation on the brain. If we want to keep a pure quantum singularity, the only energy potential that is allowed is pure tension. Now, let's try to solve this problem. And there are basically two options to help this. The first one is to add higher order curvature terms Gaussian in the body. But this is quite difficult to do, in particular to study later on the perturbations. The second option, that is the one that I will discuss in this talk, is to regularize the brain, promoting it to a fixed effect. So if we started, let's go nearby the conical singularity. We have the brain at the tip of the cone. I will regularize the brain, rendering it a codimension one defect that regularizes the space. In one side, I will have the conical geometry that we just discussed. On the other side, I will put a spherical curve that regularizes the conical singularity. And the brain becomes a 1 plus 4 dimensional object, in which we have 1 plus 3 infinite dimensions and one dimension that is compactified on the single.
That's right. I understand. So you said that I can only put pure tension. Is that something that, so if I just start at the level of the action in 6 dimensions and put some arbitrary delta function source?
Yes. Yeah.
You would find the equations of motion for something?
Exactly. Given, of course, this depends on the answer that you're checking. The answer for the metric that you're doing. But with the most general answer that people study, this is very simple. This is just. What happens is that when you study the Einstein equations, you will find some simple terms that are localized on the brain. So in particular, you will find that the Einstein, the G-moduli tensor, the Einstein tensor, must be proportional to the induced method. And so to satisfy the Einstein equation, G-mu singular equal to G-mu singular, you must take the G-mu localized on the brain to be proportional to the induced method, and so to the tension. This is just comes from these
equations. So that just renormalizes lambda, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
This is the induced metric, right?
So this is the gamma mu is the induced metric on the brain.
Okay, so if I were to write down sort of the projected Einstein constraints, what you're saying is that the only form this can have is like renormalizing some effective three-dimensional cosmological constant.
Exactly. The T mu nu must be of the form of pure tension. This is what.
Is there a physical way to understand that? I guess that's. We can talk.
So I have another question. So if you take a limit where your sphere, I guess if you put large tension on these, yeah, right, then your sphere becomes.
Something like.
Yeah, it's kind of like. Then presumably you could integrate out your circle.
What you mean is we start with this.
Yeah.
And you choose the parameter beta that for me parameterizes the dashed angle near to one that corresponded to the case near to zero. Sorry. Well, you meant to choose the parameter beta such that this field, this rugby ball, became something like this.
Yeah, very elongated. That's right.
Yeah.
So in that case, there could be a low energy approximation and permit to integrate out there.
figure it out what
the circle, so you get a 5D effective description of your here. It seems like it would be just an easy first step to the calculation.
No, but yeah, but you in that case you don't have any more confirmation to singularity that you have interest.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Well,
because in your case, you see, in order to have to keep a finite volume for the extra dimensions, okay, the volume of the compact space is proportional, of course, to the volume of the Regby ball. In the limit in which the Regby ball becomes a noodle, the volume, unless you elongate it, as you were saying, the volume becomes zero.
Yeah,
I'm
not making it zero.
Yeah. You have to elongate it.
Yeah.
Such that this becomes a collimation one brain, as you are saying, but with an infinite dimensions, because the only way to proceed. I cannot imagine how you can preserve a finite volume and in the limit, a volume that is different than zero, in the limit in which the Regby ball becomes a noodle. Maybe you can choose the limits in some clever way. Maybe you can. But yes.
So there's that, you're saying that the statement is that there is no limit I can take, so I get a 5D effective field. That's the statement. Is that the statement?
The statement is that there is. That's if you change.
Sorry.
Yeah, I mean, I think just interesting. If you make it infinitely narrow this way, then the mass of the modes in the theta direction becomes arbitrarily large, and you can integrate them out and reduce it to an effectively finite in theory.
Yeah.
And you can, another way of saying that is you can just look for solutions independent of theta, and that is a consistent limit. You can do that.
Okay.
But in terms of this problem, the corrections to that still have these singular properties.
Yeah.
So you can sort of get a well-defined 5D theory. When you look for directions from the quick supply modes, they're all singular in the same brain. So it's not too helpful as a way of making sense of this.
Yeah. Okay. So let's consider the possibility to regularize the brain from a strict codimension 2 singularity to a codimension 1 singularity. Codimension 1 singularity. As I picture here. Now, as I told you now, the outer side of the space, this one, will correspond to the conical geometry, to the Regby ball that I pictured. While the inner side will smooth the tip of the cone, substituting it with a sphere pattern. Now, this is a possibility. In this case, you can put whatever you like on the brain, so the energy-making tension that you prefer. But there is another question now, that is, what does fix the position of this codimension one brain in the body? From another point of view, what does fix the radius of this small circle? And we will see later that this is done by choosing a proper coupling between the brain and the magnetic field in the body. So in this sense, we can have a system that can admit the preferred arrangement in tensor and can lead to Einstein gravity on the brain and large distances, as I will show you. So let me present the background system. The background system is similar to the one I was discussing before, but now, as I said to you, the conical singularity is replaced by a spherical curve that regularizes. And we should live on this codimension one brain in which there are 1 + 4 dimensions and one of these dimensions is compactified on a small system. The action for this system is this one. We have a 6-dimensional part for the action. It is identical to the one that I discussed before, so gravity, molecular constant, and gauge field. But we must choose 2 different sizes of the cosmological constants and the 2 sides of the brain. And after, I will take this action from the brain. So an action that contains tension and a coupling, a mass band for the gauge field. So I have a direct coupling between the bulk gauge field and the brain. This is given by this. So this is on. Now I want to study the consistency of this model at the background level. Afterwards, I will perturb it, and I will add energy momentum, the preferred energy momentum patch on the brain. So I will not limit my discussion to this. But at the background level, we must show that this system is. Now, notice that the brake action, this form of the action, breaks the bulk gauge symmetry, but only at the position of the brain, with a mass term for the gauge field that is proportional to square. And this term will give the coupling with the gauge field that is, first of all, necessary to render the system consistent, as I will show, and secondly, will be useful to stabilize all the models in this case. Now, why do I choose two different potential constants on the two sides of the brain? And this is given by the requirement that the metric must be continuous on the brain position. This will come from the requirement of continuity. But although the metric is continuous, it will have jump, then we will have jumps on the first derivatives of the metric and of the gauge fields at the brain position. And these jumps must be compensated by junction condition, Israel junction condition, and generalization of this. So this is the background system that I'm going to discuss. So the solution in the bulk that corresponds to this geometry can be represented in this very simple way. So I have four flattening dimensions plus this part that resembles the geometry of a sphere, however, the argument of the cosinus is not just theta, but the argument is given by this function that is stepwise linear. It can be expressed as a sum of Heaviside step functions. And with this simple form, you can describe this space. Here, in particular, the physical meaning of n theta is that n theta is a latitudinal coordinate, and the value theta equal to theta bar, which is a fixed point for this function, corresponds to the brain position. So the brain is at this level to an, is located to an arbitrary point theta bar, while n theta equal to pi over 2 corresponds to the position of the pole that now is moving. Here in this metric, the parallel coordinate phi instead corresponds to the azimuthal coordinate. So this is the background solution in the model. Now we must study the junction conditions, and to study them, it is crucial to have the brain action that, as I mentioned before, is given by this expression. One can show that related to this brain action, one finds an anisotropic energy momentum tensor, an energy momentum tensor that is different on the 1 plus 3 infinite dimensions that you observe, and on the circular azimuthal direction phi. We have two kinds of conditions to solve. The first one is the Israel junction condition that relates the jump or the extrinsic curvature of the metric to the energy momentum tensor of the brain, and is given by, in general, by this expression, where this parenthesis means jump. So the difference between this quantity evaluated on one side minus the same quantity evaluated on the other side of the brain. Here, the extrinsic curvature is given by this formula. And inserting this general, our solution in this general formula, one finds that this relation turns out to be this. So it depends on the angle and on the position. This is only one of the conditions to solve, actually two. There is a third condition that comes from the fact that the Maxwell equation is discontinuous at the brain position. And so you must in order to satisfy the jump on the Maxwell equation, you must consider a coupling between the gauge field, the bad gauge field, and the brain. And by our coupling, it is possible to show that you can satisfy this condition, the condition that comes from the Maxwell equation. And this will give an additional relation between the parameters of the moment. So at the end, the result is this. We will have three independent conditions for the three available parameters, that are the brain tension, the mass term, that is the coupling between the bar gauge field and the brain, and the brain position theta bar. And the three relations can be summarized by this equality. And as a byproduct of our coupling between the gauge field and the brain, we find that the brain position is stabilized. So once you have chosen lambda, lambda s and q, also the position of the brain is fixed. So in this way, we have that the bandwidth which fixes the radius of the sphere and the position of the brain. Now, given this setting, the analysis of linear perturbations that I'm going to discuss allow to understand first how this stabilized model is, so the scalar fields that are fixed by these couplings, how this stabilized model behaves when we have perturbation in the energy momentum tensor of the brain, and how does gravity behave at large distances on the brain itself, and which kind of corrections to Einstein gravity one does find for this system at short distances. And how the answers to this question depend on the brain position theta bar. So let's go to see how the perturbation affects. Okay. The degrees of freedom are the following. Okay. First of all, let's impose some symmetry. We will impose, we will only study perturbations, imposing azimuthal symmetry, so symmetries around the azimuthal coordinate. And we will look only at zero modes with the four-dimensional mass equal to zero. We will also impose a Z2 reflection symmetry at the equator of the regular, while the brain position will not enjoy any particular status. And now the most general perturbations for the method is given by this expression, where we separate the perturbations into scalar, vector, and tensor components from the four-dimensional point of view. And we will only concentrate on the scalar and tensor components, since it's possible to see that the vector ones do not couple to the brain energy momentum tensor. So these are the most general perturbations. Here you can see the tensor perturbation. And all the rest are the scalar perturbations. And we will also impose the so-called transverse traceless gauge on the tensor perturbation. After, you must also consider the perturbation on the gauge field, the scalar perturbations that are given by this one. And an additional mode plays a very important role, that is the brain backing. That is the perturbation, the scalar perturbation of the position of the brain in the body. So the brain, we start with a brain located at theta equal m theta equal to theta bar, and we must allow for a perturbation of the position. And after, we must of course consider the perturbation that we are more interested on, that are the perturbation of the brain energy momentum tensor. So we will allow for perturbation of the energy momentum tensor along the four infinite components and along the azimuthal coordinate that is compatible on a small circle.
I have a naive question. So, naive, you have perturbation in the gauge field in the metric, and you have brain bending, which is kind of like brain geometry. But also, now your brain has a term which is a square, right? Your breaking gauge invariance. So, really, there should be a Zuckerberg field associated with that. Yeah, that would be.
Yeah, it is possible to see that you can gauge a width. You mean the Zuckerberg field on the brain?
On the brain, right, exactly.
You can choose a gauge in which that is consistent.
I see.
Okay.
So have you've now chosen that gauge? Or?
Excuse me?
So have you chosen such a gauge, or you're
yes.
planning
it? Yes. So essentially, yes.
So what freedom do you have left?
What do you mean? Okay, you have the gauge.
Is there something left after you have stuff? Like, is there other stuff you can fix, or?
You can still choose. Now, in the next slide, I will partially answer to this question. So, at this level, we have the freedom to choose to make coordinate transformations, as usual, given by this. And this is not related to the freedom to choose the gauge such. So you still have this gauge freedom. But what is nice is that you can study the system, the perturbations, the equation of motion for the perturbation in a completely gauge invariant level. That is, you can do combination of the perturbations that are gauge invariant, and you can write all the equations in this gauge invariant. With these gauge invariant variables. And two, you can solve all the equations at the gauge invariant. We did it. And so the results are the following. You find that the equation for the gauge invariant color perturbations for the metric and for the gauge field can be solved exactly in both sides of the brains. And you find that they depend only on two massless modes that we call sip size. So at the end, you will have three scalar modes that will have a well-defined geometrical interpretation. One is the brain bending mode that I was mentioning before, that remains there. And second, you will have two scalar perturbations, sip size and deep size. And it is possible and simple to see that these two scalar perturbations have a very nice geometrical meaning. Deep psi corresponds to the perturbation of the size of the volume of the space-time and of the size of the on the length of the circumference. While sip psi will be associated with the deformation on the shape of the space-time. So we have that the scalar perturbations have a geometrical meaning that is very clear. Given this, you must return and solve the junction conditions for the perturbations. Now, remember that we are also perturbing the energy momentum tensor. What one finds is that the Maxwell equation will give a junction condition for the perturbations that is independent from the perturbation of the energy momentum tensor, and is given by this formula that one can use to fix one of the scalar modes, for example, sip psi. While the Israel junction conditions, so the conditions on the jumps of the extensive coverage of the brain, will provide these two relations. The first one comes from the conditions along the 1 plus 3 infinite dimensions, and the second one will come from the Israel condition along the azimuthal direction. The first condition will tell us that the brain, the matter, the TMU, bends the brain. And one finds a relation that is exactly identical to the one that one finds in the world case and the random sample case. So the energy tensor on the brain, the trace of it, acts as a source for the bending mode. What is new on this system is that the phi-phi component of the Israel junction condition will provide a relation between the mode deep psi that, let me remember you, was parameterizing the deformation of the change of the volume of the compass space. So you will have a relation between this mode deep psi and this relation, T, that is the trace T mu mu, minus T over 3 minus T phi phi. So what happens is that the matter on the brain, this combination, will fix the scalar mode that controls the volume. And so this mode is frozen for a certain value. So this is what all the junction conditions tell us. At this point, it is quite straightforward to answer to the last question, that is how gravity behaves at large distances on the brain. That is, suppose that we live on the brain. Do we see Einstein gravity at large distances, or do we find some contributions, scalar-like contributions at large distances, like Bernstein? So to answer this question, we must study the equation for the tensor modes, take into account the brain contributions. Okay, this is a bit technical. What one finds is that you can write the equation for the tensor mode in a way that the equation for the tensor mode is in a way that is valid both in the bulk and on the brain. And the brain contribution can be written as a delta function singularity located at the brain position. One can solve this equation at the third mode level using Green function. And one can see that the solution for this equation can be split in a pure tension and scalar component that depends on the energy momentum tension on the brain, the tensorial part, and on the bending mode, the scalar part. Here in this formula, V2 is the volume of the internal space. Now, let me show to you just the final result. One finds that at the linearized level, the Ricci tensor R mu can be written in this way. What one finds is that R mu has a contribution that recycles the one of Einstein gravity plus a scalar contribution that is here. Where this scalar parameter epsilon is given by a certain combination of the scalar modes that I presented before. Okay, actually you have two scalar contributions. One is the one that was related to the bending mode that using the junction condition allowed to write this sum as this one. So you have the Einstein part, this, plus a Bransch-Dichelai contribution. Now the question is, which is the physical effect of this part? And this is what I'm going to discuss. Okay, first of all, let me show to you. Notice that here we have this expression that corresponds to the Planck mass from the four-dimensional point of view. And this is exactly the usual kinematic Dimopoulos value formula that relates the Planck mass to the product between the fundamental scale in six dimensions to the four times the volume. But we found it quite generally. But now let's go to discuss the scalar contribution associated with epsilon. It is possible to use the junction conditions and the results, the junction condition for the perturbations and the results for the equations that relate to the perturbations to write this epsilon as this expression. Okay, this is a very complicated expression. This function f is a complicated expression, but it is regular. It is bounded between 1 and 2. I didn't write a complete expression. But what is interesting is that we know now that epsilon is proportional to the psi times this constant. We can use now the equation, one of the junction conditions that related deep psi to the brain energy momentum tensor, to rewrite the effective Einstein equation on the brain as this formula. So we have this part, that is the Einstein part, plus this part that was the one associated with epsilon. And here I used the junction condition that related deep psi, so epsilon, to the energy momentum tensor of the brain, so to this part. And so what is very interesting is that we can see that this second line is subleading in respect to the first one, just because here you have derivatives that are weighted by a detect some quantity that are of the same size, or the same size of the first lines. Okay, you can see very easily if you go to the momentum space, this can be written as p squared over 1 over r squared. And so this part will become important only for momenta that are of the order of 1 over r. So only for scales that are of the order of r, so of the order of the compactification scale. That is, at large distances, only this term will dominate. Only at short distances of order r, one expects that this second term will contribute. And notice also that this term is additionally suppressed by this factor, 1 minus sinusoid theta bar, that is smaller than 1. It becomes equal to 1 only for theta bar equal to 0, so for a brain at the equator. But for a brain that is near the conical singularity, so for the theta bar that is near pi over 2, this brain, this term is additionally suppressed. So, taking the singular limit in which theta bar goes to pi over 2, the second line becomes even more and more negligible. So, the corrections due to the frozen modulus epsilon, so to the frozen modulus deep psi, are typically subdominant in respect to even to the Kluger Klein modes that I didn't consider here. So I showed in this way that one can recover Einstein gravity on the brain at large distances, plus corrections that are small, always of the order, at least of the order of the compactification scale, one to another. So one could ask also the final question, that is, the limit in which the brain approaches the singularity, the bar equal to pi over 2. So in this limit, as I just mentioned, the correction in the right-hand side of the Einstein equation decouples. So the second line of the Einstein equation have a correction that goes to 0. This, since 1 minus sine of theta bar goes to 0 for theta bar that goes to pi over 2. So theta bar that goes to pi over 2 corresponds to the case in which the brain approaches the singularity. So you have that the brain becomes pure polymorphic to singularity. So, but however, there is another problem that we have that one of the transition conditions could be written in this way. So you see that in the limit in which the bus goes to pi over 2, this condition is no more than has a problem because you can see that the right hand side usually diverges unless this is equal to 0. So in order to have to satisfy this, you should require that the perturbation theta that corresponds to the perturbation on the brain of the bending mode should diverge as well. But since we are working on the at the linear level, you cannot trust this limit. So this kind of approach cannot study in a reliable way the limit in which the brain approaches the singularity. So all this, or what I told you, is perfectly valid, but it is does not admit a consistent limit for a brain that approaches the quantum singularity. So let me conclude. I presented a regularized version of a four-dimensional two-brain model in which the bulk is compactified by fluxes. I showed that at the background level, the brain position is stabilized by the coupling with the gauge field. By studying linearized perturbation around this background, I investigated the behavior of gravity on the brain, and I showed that general relativity, Einstein general relativity, is recovered at large distances. And I could quantify the correction to general relativity directly at the level of the effective Einstein equations. However, the limit of brain thickness that goes to 0 is still problematic. So the limit in which the brain reaches the singular point. It seems to suggest that the brain matter must disappear, otherwise the brain bending mode diverges. So as an outlook, how does gravity behave at nonlinear level? Can we find exact solutions to describe black holes on the brain? This is a very interesting subject in this case. And it is also possible to ask about the construction of cosmological models in brainwaves with flux stabilization, as the one that I just described. For example, the pure De Sitter case for the brain is a straightforward generalization of what it is now. And it would be also interesting to develop a deeper understanding of the limit in which the brain thickness vanishes.
So you can view this kind of as like a more realistic version of ADD, is that right?
Yes, it is a more complete version, because what ADD did was to construct the model, very interesting, but as a first step, they didn't consider the back reaction of the brain tension.
Yeah. So is this some sort of really hand-wavy way that you would expect the predictions about black hole production to change? I mean, is it possible?
This really depends on a lot of things, on the stabilization, how you stabilize the extra dimensions. I didn't consider the black hole for the program of black hole production. You mean at LHC?
Yeah, for instance.
In this case, no.
No,
I did not. People usually always work on a regime in which the correction from general activity. Usually they work on a regime in which you imagine that the black holes probe all the extra dimensions, in this case the six dimensions. They don't take into account the fact that the extra dimensions are compactified, like in this case, on the sphere. That is, for them, the black hole metric that they write is, for example, in the Schwarzschild case, is a six-dimensional Schwarzschild metric. They didn't consider a black hole that is not purely six-dimensional, but it is localized on the brain, so it has a different shape.
In the limit that you take theta small enough that the brain thickness would be string scale, and then if your R raises the sphere is much bigger than string scale, you say perturbation theory breaks down because in zero tension condition it's supposed to be nonlinear.
Yeah, the problem is that the limit in which the brain thickness goes to zero, you find, as you say, that one of the junction conditions breaks down. The linear analysis doesn't work. So this kind of analysis works only in the limit in which you take the brain thickness much larger than the let us say, string in the sense. Only when, in the sense.
So what is it large compared to? Probably it has to be, theta has to be significant.
Yeah, of course, yes. The scale of your problem is half.
Right, so that's the order of R.
Yeah.
Pretty
bad. Yeah. Yeah, of course you can gain a factor 2, 3, 4, but you cannot go much.
So the lesson, so if I can just say, right, the lesson from your talk is that these KKLT people, it's far from obvious that the gravity is 40 once you go to low energy and so forth.
No. Let's say that it's far from obvious. I don't want to criticize. This is just for my point of view. Is a first step to try to render, let us say, consistent string models that, okay? It is possible, I think that it is very likely that the string more realistic string models work in a similar way. But what is interesting to see in detail, completely, in a particular model, what you should expect, let us say, more general models, which, however, you have much more fits to play with, so it is much more difficult to get intuition of what you're doing.
Can you think of cosmological models besides plugging into cosmological constant, let's say scale of heat in the ball to get some analysis?
Yeah, you can. People is considering also this possibility.
I guess I'm a little confused. So you pointed out that the junction condition diverges.
Yeah, and only in the limit.
Right, when the guys really thin. But I mean, doesn't that just mean that the junction condition can't be imposed? Not necessarily that the perturbation theory is breaking down.
So you mean that?
I mean, it could be that you have well-defined linear perturbations, but you can't join those two space times together. I don't understand. I mean, I guess I'm a little unclear on why that immediately implies that the whole perturbative approach.
No. So you mean that it can be that the two spaces that I'm considering, so the one external, what they call external, right. One side can't, and the other side cannot be. But this is, I'm interested exactly on this kind of space times. So the hypothesis is that the metric is continuous and you can define correctly the.
But you can still have well defined perturbation theory on either side of the junction.
Yeah.
I guess that's what I'm just trying to put.
Yeah, yeah. The problem is that if you cannot impose the junction conditions, this means that there is something of that you don't understand at the level of the brain. This is
but it's a statement of the background, not the perturbation. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But since I'm interested to the behavior of gravity on the brain itself, so on this, I have. Okay, the issue of the junction conditions is very important. I cannot say, okay, I've been asked to study the junction conditions, I just concentrate on the perturbations. I mean, the behavior of the brain is the crucial point that I want to study with this.
Okay. Other questions?